Good morning, everybody. I'm going to be speaking about a whole group of topics having to do with people and how they deal with their kashrus issues when they're working in a non-kosher environment. Most people, I mean, at their workplace. What I'm going to speak about is really something that was started about 15 years ago, which is, at that time I did not work at the CRC, I worked at the OU, and they also thought about these kind of questions of how do people deal with kashrus issues out in the workplace. And they went to the public and said, tell us the kind of shilas that you get. Tell us the kind of questions that you face in your office, not that you get, that you think of, that you as a person out in the world, you keep kosher and you have these kind of questions. We then took those questions and went to a shechter and said to them, okay, tell us the answers to these questions. We went through them back and forth to develop dozens and dozens of issues that people had spoken about. I'm going to mention to you a whole bunch of them that came up then. And those issues are all over the place. Everyone faces the same types of issues. I'm going to primarily be speaking about four different types of questions. The first two are the ones everyone will think of, and that is, in order for food to be kosher, it has to be inherently kosher. Okay, we can't eat pigs or bishalakum or things that are treif. Those are things that are inherently kosher, not kosher. The second half of that, which you probably also thought of, is we can't eat foods that are made on treif kalim. Okay, we can't. If my food is kosher, but I put it into a treif pot or into a microwave that's not kosher, I can't eat that food potentially if I'm eating it in treif kalim. Two other things that we're going to talk about are marasayin. A person, the Torah says, the yis and the kiyim, a person has to look honest, a person has to look like they're doing the right thing, and therefore, how does that affect me when what I do that actually is okay, I'm really eating food that's kosher, I'm allowed to eat it, but it doesn't look right. And either I don't look like I'm doing the right thing, or someone might learn the wrong thing from watching what I'm doing. And the last is, a din, we'll call it basher shen salmon ayin, which is to say is, if I have food and it's kosher, and I want to make sure I protect its integrity, I make sure that it stays kosher, I brought my sandwich to work, how do I know that I actually have what I brought is actually what I have a few hours later when it's time to eat lunch. Okay, and we're going to talk some other little issues, other questions along the way, but those are the four main things we're going to be talking about. Okay, the first, a question that many people face. I am actually not a coffee drinker, but most people are. And as Rabbi Cohen mentioned a minute ago, people have a question. I walk into my office. I like to eat coffee. Lots of people like to drink coffee. Okay, what can I do? What can I drink? So we know that the coffee itself, the plain coffee itself without any flavors, inherently it's a kosher item. If it has flavors or all kinds of other funny ingredients to it, then it needs hashgacha. But if it's a plain coffee, then it's okay. I'm allowed to drink it. Okay. What gets complicated is, if I was just making the coffee in my own little office, that would be one thing. But what if I'm making it in the office's coffee machine? Okay, and coffee machines over time have become more and more sophisticated. They're not as simple as they used to be. Okay, So the first thing's like this. If we have a coffee machine that's used to make only coffee, that's all they make in it. The fact that some of those coffees have flavors, which may not have hashgacha, we at the CRC don't consider that to be a concern. The fact that you can't drink the ones that are flavored unless they have hashgacha, but the fact that they have hashgacha is not, so to speak, big enough to affect the non-flavored coffees. And that wouldn't pose a concern. But what happens if they have other things in them? There are other things. Rabbi Cohen mentioned, there are people making, like in Keurig machines, they're making all kinds of things in there that are, not all kinds. There are a number of things of hot cocos and, he mentioned, soups that are made that don't have hashgacha that, in fact, could be more seriously treif. Okay? In those cases, a person cannot use that machine. You can't use the machine, even though I put in a fresh K-cup or a fresh pod or however your machine runs, I can't use that machine because it has non-treif bleias and it absorbs non-kosher taste, and actually, there's also residue. If you open up and you look inside the machine, which we've done, if you look inside of it, you'll see there's residue from items. So there's residue and there's taste left over from the food. And therefore, if you come in your office, all they have at the Keurig station is just coffee, flavored and non-flavored, or maybe teas that are flavored and non-flavored. You can use those. You can use the ones that are kosher. But if they have unusual things like hot cocoa or the soups, or if they don't have it, but people bring it in from the outside, they bring it from home, then you should not use those without, you shouldn't use them. You don't really have a realistic way to kasher them, and therefore you shouldn't use them. Now, in other offices, these are maybe a little less sophisticated, instead of like a Keurig machine, they'll have a coffee machine. Some of the shuls in town have these, where it's a machine dispenses a dozen different things. You know, you press these and these buttons, and you get out the thing that you asked for. Okay? Those machines very much depends on the machine. That is to say is, there are certain parts of the equipment that are shared, all of them use the same equipment, and some parts that are separate, and it very much depends on the machine to know whether there's a crossing between the kosher sides of the machine and the non-kosher, or the nochugs and the parav, or the not chol v'sol and the chol v'sol. And you really have to poke around the machines. Someone's got to come in, when there aren't too many people around, open up the machine and trace the lines and see what crosses and what doesn't to know which things have a shine to them. Related to that is, if there's a water cooler in the office, so a water cooler, in most cases, it dispenses cold water and hot water. The hot water dispenser, for most people, the hot water is just to get hot water, like to make a coffee. Okay, but there are people who use it for other types of things. They make oatmeal, they make instant soups, very different kinds of things in those hot water dispensers. Lechatchila, a person should not be using that dispenser for his kosher thing. Okay, to me, I want to make an oatmeal there. I shouldn't be using that unless I know what goes on in my office. I have a feel for what people use it for.
Are you referring to that you have a cup of oatmeal and then you put the hot water in and then... Mm-hmm.
Right. So the problem is, it's not reich, it's called zeh. When vapors come up, they cause bleeds to go back into that spout. What happens with the evidence, if there's reasons to think that it might be okay, when you have a bidyevit case, you can call Rabbi Cohn, Rabbi Zev Cohn Sr. But if you, there's lots of Cohns over here, I'm done. It's not a great thing to be using.
Is there a way to just run another hot water?
A hospital is a whole different story. We're not talking about hospitals. So you talk to the rabbi when you get stuck in that case. It's possible. It is possible to do something. It's not a simple thing. Okay, so for a regular person, according to the Sanhedrin, we're talking about people at work, we would recommend not people not using it. A person gets stuck in the hospital, you go to Rabbi Cohn. Okay, side to that is, this is like from a different angle, is if the company that you work at is owned by someone who's Jewish, completely owned by someone who's Jewish, then the pots and pans and dishes that they have at that place are chayv and tefilas kelim. So if they make a pot of coffee in a glass carafe, it's a glass item that needs to be toveled, then if the company is completely owned by a yid, you can't use that unless it has tefilas kelim. Okay, that means if there's even a partial non-Jewish ownership, you don't have to title it, and you could use it as is. But if it's completely owned by someone Jewish, this is, I guess we call it kashrus, so to speak, but that's, you have to do tefillas kelim before you use that, and if he did it, that's wonderful. If he lets you take it out one day by lunch to do tefillas kelim, that's wonderful, but if you did not, then you should not be using it. Okay? Okay. A little loud, I can't hear from so far. Right, you're not. The coffee doesn't become not kosher, but you're not allowed to use a kli that didn't have tefillas kelim. So, really, it is. It's a little bit of a technical detail. If the coffee was ready in there, you could probably pour it out of that thing. It's you can't make coffee in that pot. Pouring it out is a little questionable in that case. Okay.
Is that included in the Keurig machine?
Okay, so Rabbi Friedman asked a question that I was not going to talk about. Okay, whether. No, really. The Keurig machine, whether the Keurig machine needs tefillas kelim or not, being as it says on the sign that I'm here to speak for the CRC's position is that any electronic items don't need to be titled. There's a whole complicated reason for why that's true. Not everybody agrees with it. And whether the Keurig does or does not need tefillas kelim is itself a very cold to do. So, I'm interested in next year at the Yafikala, they're going to invite me back, and I'll talk to you all about whether you have to turn the Keurig machines. It's a complicated question, but it's easy today because the CRC's position is anything that's electrical doesn't need to be turned.
Can you title the pot without permission from the owner? Just take it out?
Can you title it without permission from the owner? If he doesn't care about the mitzvah, and you're not stealing the mitzvah from him, then you can title it. Yeah. doesn't need the owner's permission. You're stealing his mitzvah. If he's a Sharm Shabbos person, he wants to do the mitzvah, but otherwise, yeah, you're good. Okay. Okay. Okay, a person, let's go back to some regular foods. People who are working in a non-Jewish environment have other situations where the food is not there by their choice. That is to say, they're invited to a party, there's a meeting, there's something else where this food out there that's not by my choice. It's not my lunch that I brought to there. It's not coffee that I chose to get myself a cup of coffee, but this food out for one reason or another. So if the person's there and there's just plain cut fruit and vegetables, those don't need hashgacha. Plain fruits and vegetables as cut up oranges or carrot slices, those a person can eat them as is. Of course, if a person has things there that need hashgacha, or fruits and vegetables that need to be checked for insects, then he can't eat them. It's not any different than eating in my house. So if they cut up, if there are orange slices out there, I can eat the orange slices. But if they put out a salad, by and large, if they're going to put out a salad, it's going to be something that's going to need to be checked for infestation. Unless you want to, sit there and start checking your lettuce in front of the whole neighborhood, you're probably better off just sticking with the carrot sticks. Yes, there is. There's definitely a possibility that it was. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about that case. And the Shulchan Aruch says that the way when people cut fruits and vegetables, they tend to cut many slices at a time. And therefore he explains the reason why, based on the fact that they cut many slices at a time, you can assume that your slice is okay. You don't have to worry. You can eat your slice. You can pick up your piece, your orange. The fact that when he cut it, he didn't cut one slice just for you. He cut many slices. And then the Shulchan Aruch has a reason why, because of that, you can assume that your orange is okay. Right, the Shulchan Aruch's case is lemons. That's what he talks about it specifically. Even though it's sharp, it makes a difference. You could have it here.
So if you buy a cut of fruit jewel that does not have an extra,
right?
Is that a problem?
No. No.
It's not a problem.
Right. Okay. Does that sound funny? Did I see something funny?
Okay.
I thought it is. If it's not, I guess maybe lifting, they must think it's not. It's not. If they, okay. And what?
Why do they have a shkocha?
Well, until 30 seconds ago, there were people here in the room who weren't sure if you could buy it or not. So putting a shkocha on it makes all those people confident. Now, after today, they could close down the shkocha. But until 30 seconds ago, some people didn't know that. Now, the eating fruits and vegetables, even that don't have insect issues, even those items, there are other ways you could have them, like there are people who make who will juice something for you. Okay, you could juice oranges or carrots. I'm not a big traveler. It's going to sound like I am, but I was once in China, for the CRC, and we passed. I know I'm not a big traveler, but I was at that time, and they were making bamboo juice. Okay, it tastes absolutely awful, and it looks horrific, but I couldn't not try it. They're literally taking pieces from Sachar Yisukah and just sticking it into the machine, and that was coming this green, awful tasting stuff, but how could you pass up, Anyhow, so, how many times do you get walk into a, okay, I'm going to my bamboo juice bar, They don't have those around here. So if it's just fruits and vegetables that don't need hashgacha, and everything is cold, then we don't have problems with the kalim. We don't have to worry about that the equipment was used for something not kosher, because assuming that it's clean, and assuming that what I see what they put into there, they're just sticking carrots or oranges or whatever it is, and I'm just getting a plain item that has no insect issues and no kalim, no ingredient issues, then I'm good and I can buy those things.
What's the issue with the bugs? The CRC holds that if you pulverize bugs, it's okay.
So, that's a good question. The din is, it's not that all vegetables with bugs can be, in your words, pulverized. Okay, it depends on what they are. It depends on how infested they are. So if you want to say, I want to make a drink with kale, okay, I want to put kale into my drink, then before you answer that question, call up the CRC and say, how infested is kale? Is it okay to do that through pureeing? Okay, not every vegetable is the same. Depends on how infested it is. It will depend whether it's okay. So I'm just trying to be simple and say, if you're putting oranges, you're safe. Once you put things with bugs in them, then the question gets a little bit more complicated. Okay, but all of this I'm saying to you is for fruits and vegetables. But once we get to food that's more complicated, we run into more serious issues. Like, one of the people wanted to know is, could you eat sushi It's just rice and vegetables and seaweed, I don't know, whatever, some stuff like that. But of course, we realize things are much more complicated once we hit a sushi. You know, the sushi was rice that's cooked. Well, that's a shiloh bishalakim. It has vinegar in it, which could be not kosher. It has all kinds of other stuff in it. There's soy sauce, there's things in there. So all of a sudden, once it gets more complicated, we should not be eating food that hashgacha. But if we say with simple things, again, if it's just simple fruits and vegetables cut up, or even in rice into you, they can be juiced, we can be okay and eat those items. Okay. Now let's move to Marasayan questions. Questions of, the food is kosher. Everything that I have is fine. It's not a problem what I'm eating. I know that the food is kosher, but how does it look what I'm doing here? I'm sitting here eating. How does it look that I'm eating this food? So one example was, the office is having a pizza party. And they order kosher pizza for the Jewish people who work at the office. So everyone's sitting around the table eating pizza. Okay, there, Shechter thought was, there is a Maris Ayin for me to be eating pizza with everybody else. Everyone got it from Tony's Pizza, and mine came from Tel Aviv. So how does that look? It looks like I'm eating Shechter pizza. And Shechter said in that case, the person should keep the box, the kosher box, near where they're eating. So it's obvious to people that there isn't a Maris Ayin. Okay, I just want to clarify for a second. When we say we need to avoid Maris Ayin, it doesn't have to be a big neon sign that says, this is kosher pizza. Okay? In the case of Shulchan Aruch about Maris Ayin, is if a person is eating a fleishig meal, and he has at that meal, he has almond milk. Almond milk is of course, parv, and you could drink almond milk at a fleishig meal. So Shulchan Aruch says, what you have to do is you put some almonds on the table. Okay, almonds on the table is a subtle hint that this milk comes from almonds, doesn't come from cows. Okay, but it's not a neon sign. Okay, it's just almonds on the table. Okay, the point is you have to make some kind of a notice that there is a. It's you know I'm not doing what everybody else is doing. It's a little notice that I put some almonds on the table. So leaving the kosher pizza box on the table is what lets people know that I'm eating, or at least makes a point of saying I'm eating the kosher pizza, and not what they're eating.
What if it's a meeting with people all? No,
right, so Maris Ayin is I have to make a show of something, I have to make it noticeable, so even so, I believe it's appropriate to leave the box there. Some way to notice what it is. Now, that's talking about when everyone's eating the same things. We're having a pizza party, okay? But in other places, there'll be a cafeteria, okay? And everyone comes to the cafeteria, buys what they want to for lunch, and sits down to eat. So now, if I come in with my lunch from home. I don't eat from the cafeteria. The cafeteria is not kosher. It's got all kinds of things that are not kosher. There, it's not a concern of Maris Ayin because everybody knows that at the cafeteria, you don't just eat what's being served there. People bring their own food and eat at the cafeteria also. Or, you're sitting at a meeting with people at a non-kosher restaurant and you're eating an orange. Okay, so then, the fact that you're sitting in a non-kosher restaurant, well, it's a little bit odd, but people have sort of gotten used to the idea that people go on business meetings in non-kosher events, and if you look, you would see that all I'm doing is eating a cut-up apple. Okay, you could see that that's what's going on. Those are not a Maris Ayin. Okay, it's only when we're the first case I said to you, where we're sitting at a pizza party, everyone's eating pizza, we're all eating the same pizza, that doesn't look right. But where we're eating, we're in a situation, we're in a cafeteria, everyone's eating whatever they want to, including me, who brought lunch from home. Yes? Okay, I wasn't sure if I should say that case. Okay, but let me tell you the most awful example of that. Okay, there are restaurants, Baruch Hashem, not in Chicago, that do the following. Treif is a treif restaurant, absolutely chazer treif. And what they do is, when they buy new dishes and silverware, they take some of those dishes and silverware, never used, and send it to a kosher restaurant or a kosher caterer. The caterer onto that, those plates and silverware, puts a beautiful kosher meal onto that thing, seals it up, and sends it off to the treif restaurant sealed. Okay, and when you want to come to that restaurant for your meeting, you come in and you say, you know, I'm coming, I want a kosher meal, and they serve you steak and potatoes on the same dishes that everybody else is eating. They pull you to the side to take off the seals. It wouldn't look nice. They bring it all sealed up in front of you. They serve you on their dishes and with their silverware. And you eat your steak and potatoes. Well, he eats his steak and potatoes. Yours is glatt kosher. And his is, of course, nevela. Okay, his is treif. Okay, so there are places that do that. Okay, that's an awful Maris Ayin. Okay, anybody walking in to the look of what's going on is, I happen to be eating a kosher meal. Okay, but they've done everything that they could to make it not noticeable that my meal is kosher. They did everything they could. I'm eating the same as him. I'm not eating on a paper plate, you know, with the seals all ripped open on top of this thing. I'm eating on china. Actually, it's matching china. When the meal is over, this china becomes part of the service, because it stays at the restaurant. It's their china. So it's absolutely awful. Okay, we don't do it here.
Does it matter if it's a woman or a guy? My wife goes to New York for a business meeting. Mm-hmm. No one knows her. She can fit into a crowd. Okay, wow, she's wearing a skirt, she's wearing a shadow, people don't notice. So she's sitting at a trade restaurant eating her kosher food. No one really knows she's a Jew.
Okay. It's a very good point. So that I had mentioned, I said in passing, there are two angles to Marzain. One is you don't want people to learn from you. So you say, nobody knows who I am. Okay, well, whether that's true or not, I don't know. If people walking by may not know her, they may not pass somebody by. But the other part of Marzain is the term says, v'yisim nikiyim. A person has to do things that they have to look right and honest. A person can't do something that has to look like they're doing something wrong, even if they're really doing the right thing. So that's a person for themselves. It's not that you'll learn from me, it's that I have to put on a correct face. I have to look like I'm doing the right thing. That's even though I'm doing it myself, even without the person knowing who I am. Okay. Now, there's another din. I just mentioned to you that when a person eats sleishiks and they have almond milk at the table, they need to put almonds down at the table. There's another din that's like that, which is that if two people are eating together, and I'm eating milchiks and you're eating sleishiks, we need a hecker. We need some kind of something to make it noticeable that just remind us that I'm eating fleishigs and you're eating milchigs so that I don't eat from your plate. Okay? Because if we're eating together, I might take something from your side, you'll take from my side, so we need a hecker. Okay? But that din only applies to people who are eating kosher. That means if I'm fleishigs and you're milchigs, we need a hecker on the table. You don't need a hecker if I'm eating kosher and you're eating treif, even if we're friendly with each other. Even if we know each other, we don't need a hecker. So if we're sitting at this pizza party, who was sitting at in a restaurant, that I'm eating kosher and you're eating treif, there is no need to have that kind of echo. Okay. Let me move on.
What's the difference if it's associated
with
Jewish or not?
As far as what?
Trading food, you're eating another Jew.
Does it make, as far as hecker-wise? Okay, hecker-wise, I don't see how that makes a difference. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't see how that makes a difference if it's kosher and treif. I was going to mention later on, I'll say it now, which is a very different kind of question. I don't think this is what Rabbi Kandel had in mind, which is like this. What happens if the boss sends me out to buy him lunch, okay, or to pick up lunch for him, okay, and the boss is Jewish, okay, and he tells me to go to Subway and buy him a treif sandwich, okay? He doesn't care about mitzvahs, he just wants lunch, okay? Can I bring him that lunch that he asked me to bring? He just asked me to do something to feed him treif. I'm not feed him treif, but to bring him treif and help him eat treif.
Or the business meeting, he asked you to pass
Okay, maybe. I guess that could be the same thing. That could be similar. So it's a very complicated question. It depends on many factors. Okay, which is to say that it's not, I was going to just mention the question, because if you have that kind of a relationship with somebody where they might send you out for food, you need to speak to someone and ask a shayla, because it very much depends on how knowledgeable and how religious or non-religious that person is, the person who's asking you for the food. And the answer really is actually counterintuitive to what you might have thought. Okay, so if you have that kind of a situation where you may be put in that situation where someone is going to ask you for these kind of things, you should talk it over with a rav, talk it over and say to them, this is my situation, this is the kind of thing I'm going to be faced with, and then they'll tell you yes or no, whether if or when you could do that.
Yep, Shas Maisa, you know.
Right, so that's true. So as Rabbi Shmuel Kohn said at the beginning, the Yach Kalas are people who become smarter, so that you spend your time learning something through, so before you come to the situation. It's hard to figure out the child then. Right? Live, it's hard to know. I'm not going to give you enough information to answer that child. Okay. The next group of questions has to do with what I said to you, what we call Basar Shel Salmon Ayin, or the concerns that food that I have that I know is kosher, food that I had that I know is kosher, maybe it's not exactly what I thought it was. Maybe something happened to it after I brought it to work or something like that. Okay, now there's a few rules to that din. A few rules to this chashash that maybe somebody switched my food, maybe it's not what I think it is, and things like that. Okay, and the rules are as follows. I only have to be concerned that somebody switched something. They took my sandwich and put a different one in its place. Or they switched one thing for the other. I only have to be concerned about that if they have what to gain by doing that. That is to say, is if they think my food is better or more expensive or has better quality or something, they have some reason to think that mine is better, then we'll see the situations, but then I have to be concerned that they may have switched one for the other. If there's nothing to be gained by taking my thing, if there's nothing to, mine is nothing better than theirs. It's not more available or cheaper or more expensive or fancy, nothing better about mine than theirs, then Taisha says, you don't have to be concerned that the person would switch yours to theirs. Now, another rule. Another thing is, this is going to sound sort of the opposite of what I just said, but it's as follows. We know that the only people who have nemanus, the only people who we can trust about whether a food is kosher or not kosher, is someone who themselves keeps kosher. Only someone who themselves keeps kosher is the kind of a person who has nemanus to say that food is kosher. So when we have somebody who does not keep kosher, the person does not have nemanus to say whether the food is kosher, then sometimes when they tell us things, even if they have nothing to gain, we don't believe them because there's a rule. Nusutule ramule. When someone says something that's not important to them, they're being honest about what they're saying. They don't think there's anything to be, they're not trying to trick you or gain something, but they're just not being careful about what they say. In that case, we don't believe the person because they don't care enough to answer the question in what, for me, isn't honest. Okay? And I'll tell you an example of that. I was once on a plane, and they asked if I wanted a drink, and I asked, can I have a Sprite? So I asked for a Sprite, and the stewardess hands me a can of Sierra Mist. So at that point, I was ready. At this point, it wasn't relevant because they're both kosher, but I was just having fun at this point. I said, no, can I have a Sprite? And she says, it is a Sprite. And I said, no, the brand Sprite. She says, oh, same thing. Which is to say is when I said, can I have Sprite, in all sincerity, she wasn't trying to trick me. I mean, any moron could see that it wasn't Sprite. So the point was, when I said, can I have Sprite, she heard, can I have lemon lime soda? That's what she heard. Okay, because it's Lyramula. It's not important to her which brand I wanted. I wanted lemon lime soda. So she said, here it is. And I said, but I want Sprite. She said, yeah, but it is. This is lemon lime soda. This is not orange. This is lemon lime soda. Until I sort of forced the point that she finally acknowledged that she wasn't giving me exactly what I asked for. Okay, because it's Lyramula. It's not important to her. To her, lemon lime, this brand or that brand, it's all the same thing. What's the difference? Okay, so the same thing when a person says to you a piece of information, either they have nothing to gain by it, but we have to know that to them, they understand the significance of what they're trying to say. So an example of that is, if somebody brings in coffee for the office, they go out to the store and they bring back 10 cups of coffee, okay, and Starbucks coffee. So, person brought back coffee. There's no reason why they would switch one coffee for another one. Doesn't mean anything. Why would they adopt to go get it from a tray of coffee and slip it into the cup? So we don't have to be cautious that they're trying to trick me. There's nothing to be gained. We sent them out for coffee. They came back with coffee, assuming the CRC list said that it was okay to buy this coffee, this kind of Starbucks, then we're in business. You're allowed to buy it. You're allowed to take it. We can, so to speak, trust them that they're giving us what they said they're giving us. But what happens if something more complicated? You sent them to get donuts. So if you sent them to get donuts and they come back with a box with donuts with a hashgacha on them, so why would they switch them? They have nothing to gain by switching the treif donuts to the kosher donuts. They're not better, they don't cost more, it's all the same. But when we get to things where it's not so clear, like let's say there's a container of food. Now, this depends on your office. Let's say there's a big bucket of pretzels in the lunchroom. So in some offices are more formal, and when the bucket's over, they throw in the garbage. Okay, in other ones, when the bucket's ending, they refill it. Okay, so if they refill it, to them, Yeah, it's that brand. Of course it's that brand. Again, it's not significant to, from their perspective, whether it's this brand of pretzels or that brand of pretzels, there's a big difference. So you say, you got more pretzels? He says, yeah, we haven't got the same as we always get. Okay, we always get the same kind, has different significance for them than for you. For you, from Kasher's perspective, I want this brand, not that brand. From their perspective, when I say we get the same kind, I mean the small ones that are with this shape, or with salt, or without salt, or whatever we pick. They're not trying to trick you, because they're not being careful. Okay, but now the more traditional Buster Shin Asylum Shilas, which is, in fact, they have something to gain. There's a reason why they might want to take mine instead of theirs. So there, the way a person protects themselves to make sure that their food hasn't been switched, there's a few ways. A few ways are, let me say the case first, so you'll understand, I'm not being clear what I'm saying. I come to work with my corned beef sandwich, and I put it into the fridge. Okay? When I come back 3 hours later to eat lunch, how do I know that corned beef sandwich is the one that I put in there? I put a sandwich in there this morning. The person has what to gain? The kosher meat is considered to be better and more expensive, and all kinds of reasons why they'd want my sandwich. So how do I know that the sandwich that I left you this morning is the same sandwich that when I come back a few hours later for lunch? How do I know I'm getting my sandwich? Mine was kosher, but how do I know that the sandwich I left you is the same one that I left, that I'm coming back to get a few hours later? So one way, this wouldn't work in my fridge case, is when there's mirsis. When the person wouldn't switch it because they're afraid of being caught. That is to say, if I leave it on my desk, I leave my sandwich on my desk, and I walk away for a second, no one's going to switch it because I might walk in any second. Okay? Now, if I move into a meeting for an hour, then there's no mirsis. They're not afraid of being caught anymore. But if I walk away for a minute, I don't have to worry about that because nobody would switch. Okay, the other ways to make sure that food was not switched is either to have a simon, to put some kind of a mark on it that you could tell if somebody tampered with this food, or to have tfias ayin. Tfias ayin means that I could recognize the food, which is typical for like homemade food. I know how I made this sandwich. I know what it's going to look like. When I come back, you couldn't make another sandwich that looks just like mine. So then I have tfias ayin. I could recognize. I don't have any kind of mark on it that tells me it's mine, but I have a tfias ayin. When I come back, I could tell that this is the sandwich that I left there, and that's good enough. This is a question people asked. They said, there's a party, an office party, and there's a couple of Jewish people in the office, so they set up a table with the food for the Jewish people. And that food is kosher. We watched when they brought it out, the food is kosher. Can I eat that food that they're putting at that kosher table? Which is to say, do I have to be concerned that, well, there's similar food on the other tables. Do I have to be concerned that someone switched this food and that food? The answer is, as long as there are people milling around, and basically someone's on top sees what's going on, you're okay. There's nobody would switch the food because they would see it. Somebody would watch it. It would be odd if somebody would be taking, sandwiches from this side and moving them to that side. But what Shechta said is, if there's loose food on the table, that he wouldn't eat. I mean, because people put things up and down all the time, so the food that's on the platters or out, that's there, that's from the original stuff, that you could eat from, as opposed to the stuff that's just loose or, a plate that's sitting there, that you wouldn't know it's kosher. If you have someone who you assign to watch it?
No, you said they're milling around.
No, milling around, the point is that is a mirsis. I won't switch something because there are people watching me. I'm afraid of being caught. What?
What if the people milling around are all good?
Well, if the person really knew that all the Yidden were out, like they announced, we're davening mincha now, and all the Yidden walked out, okay, so then there's no mirsis because he's not afraid of being caught. There's no one who's going to catch him. You know what I mean? But if there's people milling around, I don't know who's, is there a Yid watching me, then there is a mirsis because I don't know who's watching me. I wouldn't switch things. Okay, so kosher salad bar in a non-kosher supermarket. Okay, so let's think about that. Let's think about that. What's the concern? That someone should switch with somebody? The drop it at the hip. Okay, so it's a question. That someone have to stand there and get a feel. Does anybody do that? I don't know if anybody does that. Do people take from here and they say, I don't like these, and stick them to those? I don't. I would.
Like the one at Jewel, they have a Mashiach watching.
Yeah,
Right.
I
don't know if there's a real concern that somebody would move stuff from the other side. I, cautious person, would be more concerned is that the store might refill it. Would the store come in and refill the food that needs hashgacha when no one's watching it? Yeah, that would be more of a concern to me that someone actually leaving from it, maybe. I guess you have to watch it. So does anybody put food back in? We hope not, right? But, okay. And we hope not for our health. I mean, that people are not just taking food and, you know, whatever. But, so it depends on, someone's got to watch it and learn what people do. I don't understand the habits of the people. Put food back in over there? I would think people don't put food back. But someone has to watch it for a while and just see if that's how people do that. Okay. Last, if there's a microwave in the office, okay? So, as I mentioned beforehand, if there's a microwave that people warm up anything and everything in it, the microwave is not kosher, and I can't use that microwave. I can use the microwave if I double wrap my foods. So that means I have to be think of what I'm going to do, figure out how to double wrap it, and I can put my food into the microwave. Okay? And that's what some people do. That's what you need to do. You have to warm up your food at lunch or at some point, and you could use the microwave double wrapped. Now, in
asking you to put two jewel back around
it. Yes. Now, some people, the question was if you could use two bags just as a double wrapping. Yes, you could do that. I'm not about your health wise. He wants to about cautious wise. Right. That's between you and your doctor. Okay. So. But now, what happens if?
Is that what you meant? My mushrooms in the microwave.
So what I was going to say was a very good point, which is when we talk about putting double wrapping, you need to wipe the microwave. It doesn't have to be sparkling clean, but there shouldn't be pieces of food sitting in the microwave on the floor, around the edges. It has to be reasonably clean before you do that. Now. Why? Because what happens is, if you have actual food there, it's easier for bleas to travel into inside of your stuff.
Well, I thought the double wrapping insulates it from any bleas. No, I mean.
I'm gonna have to think about that. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced that that's correct. I'm not sure. Now, what happens if the office sets up? They say, hey, we have a bunch of yidden who work here. I'm going to set up, we'll make a kosher microwave. We know the Jews want to be able to warm up their food, so there's four guys in the office who are Shomer Shabbos or who are Jewish. We're going to make a kosher microwave for those people. So, the answer is, there's a kosher microwave. So there's two possible pitfalls with a kosher microwave. Okay.
The first one is,
there are some people who don't keep kosher the same way that you and I do. Okay, their concept of keeping kosher and our concept is not the same, and therefore, if they're not keeping kosher the way we do, then they're using the microwave with foods that I wouldn't eat in my house. So that, in which case, it's not really a kosher microwave. Okay, and in some cases, the more significant concern is there are people who are not Jewish who will use the kosher microwave anyhow. Okay, they use it because the other one is busy. They'll stick their food into your microwave. Okay, so having a kosher microwave is only worth something if you can actually control it. Okay, now there was a time that the CRC had a person working in the office who was not Shomer Shabbos. Okay, so all of a sudden we had this person who's not Shomer Shabbos. Well, we actually have four microwaves in CRC, two milchiks and two fleshy ones. Okay, well, how kosher are those microwaves if there's someone in the building who's not Shomer Shabbos? Okay. How we dealt with that is history, not relevant anymore. That person doesn't work anymore. But that's just a small example. We only had one person who's not Shomer Shabbos. Okay, but imagine in an office that's half and half, where most of the people are not Shomer Shabbos, having a kosher microwave doesn't save the day. Okay, it doesn't save the day to have a kosher microwave if it's not going to be controlled. Okay, I know somebody who worked in an office where it was mainly from people, but not all were Shomer Shabbos. They had so it was a big kosher microwave. He wasn't comfortable. So this person stuck a little microwave under his desk. Okay, he bought his own meal for $50. He stuck one under his desk. And that's what he did. He said, look, I don't want to eat with that microwave. That's what he did. Okay.
These same problems in the hospitality room of different hospitals?
That's a good question. I mean, do they have a microwave there?
Many.
Yeah, and if it's open to anybody and everybody, yeah, I hear the question.
Technically, it's not yet in the combination, but there are people there without yarmulkes in there.
That's a fair question.
There's a potential concern about the double covering maybe not working. Is it
potential to stop them by a microwave or by a regular oven?
It would be an oven, but most people wouldn't double wrap stuff into a regular oven. I guess you could do it.
For example, on airplanes, they use double oven. You know, they do double covering on the coach floor, and let's say there's junk in the oven.
Right. So okay. It's what to think about. I have to think about that question. The person
is not God for your shell.
No. I'm thinking about in most offices, people are not sticking food into an oven. That you know, that we're thinking about from that kind of a person. But we can think about that. Okay. Any questions? Okay, so double wrapping does not need to be hermetically sealed. It needs to just be covered, and reasonably covered. It does not have to be a perfect seal to it. But it has to be covered. It has to be covered well. So when you put the bag, when the person puts, the, in this case, the bag around it, the bag is not a perfect seal, but that's okay. Covered it. Just cover it. On all the sides, if you can make it work. Yeah.
So even in the case where the gentleman buys a microwave and puts it underneath his desk, doesn't he have to be worried that somebody might use it?
So there we go back to saying is, would anyone have a benefit to using it? The cleaning crew comes in at night. If they wanted to warm something up, would they go to the microwave under your desk, or they go to the big microwave that's sitting there that's available to you? Why would they go to bother? So we're not concerned they're out to get you. It's only if it's for their benefit to do it. Why would they do that? There's no logical reason why they would do that, so that you don't have to worry about it.
But again, if it's during the day, it's not clean for during the day, and the reason why is because the other microwaves are being used. Hey, I know he has one underneath his desk. Okay.
So it's a matter of if there's a concern, then there is. It depends, yes or no. I would be surprised. I don't have a microwave in my office, okay? But I would be surprised if I walked in one day and there was a guy under my desk. Okay? I'd be like, what's going on here, right? So most people, I wouldn't expect that somebody's climbing under my desk in the middle of the day. At night, somebody, right? You know what I mean? When the cleaning crew, why would they use the microwave? But you have to think, is it real? Would somebody, again, Tyson says, we don't worry that someone's out to get me. It's just a matter of if it's good for him, if he has a benefit from it. So I wouldn't be so worried about it. But it depends on your situation. If you think people are going to use it, then those lines. If that is.
No issue with
yes.
There's an urban tale out. Maybe it's true. Somebody got a kosher meal on a plane, went to wash, came back and realized what had happened, what might have happened, and wouldn't eat it. And the guard next to him said, why aren't you eating? He says, well, I didn't see it. I don't know what happened. And he says, you know, I've never eaten kosher, and I switched.
Okay, so
it's a tale. Is that something you should be worried about?
So if there's a if you walk away, then
no,
you
I
can't. So the rule is, the rule is, okay. If there's a concern that he would switch it, I mean, he wouldn't be caught. You wouldn't notice a difference, or he wouldn't be afraid of being caught. Then you can't leave food uncovered. You can't leave it like that. You need to have some kind of a cinnamon on it, whatever it is. I know somebody who went to a healthcare facility, we'll call it, and that person was there for a long time. They used to bring food with them. So they just put a cinnamon on it. They took the sandwich and put it into the, you know, the general fridge that everybody used, and they wrote their name across the opening in a way that if you ripped it, you would tell that it was him. You know, you could tell that the person left the cinnamon, you know, so.
Why can't you go after a roll?
That what?
A roll.
That most people wouldn't.
That it wouldn't happen, even though it might happen. You still have to be locked.
It's a good question. I don't know the answer. I know that we don't do that, but I don't know the logic of it. That's a question. I don't know the answer to your question. But it's not the truth. We are concerned that maybe someone did it. I don't know why we don't say most times it wouldn't happen. That's a fair question. I don't.
You mentioned before, like about pretzels and things like that. You're only going and working in your office, and the non-kosher pretzels, there's no tray for stuff in it, per se. There's no problem putting that out for your goyim at the office or something.
Say it again.
Items without hashkafa, huh? But presumably, they're not putting
Khazar
into...
Your question is, the boss is the Shomer Shabbos?
Right.
So he wants if he could put food out to him.
Right.
I have a feeling the next speaker is going to speak about those kind of questions. So if that's... my question is, we're the worker. I think the next person is going to speak about those kind of things. If I can put out food for them, which may or may not be kosher, I think that's what he's going to talk about.
Somebody,
yes?
Last question. Double covering. There's no concern with Zayas.
So Zaya, in Shulchan Aruch it says, when you have a concern of Zaya, if there's a cover, we don't worry about Zaya. Because in order for it doesn't have to be... Right. But for Zaya to be a concern, what has to happen is as follows. The vapors have to go out, and then the condensate has to drip back into my food. So any cover blocks condensate from dripping back into my food. So it doesn't have to be a hermetic seal. Concern ourselves that vapors are going to come back into my food. It's that liquid have to drip back in. So liquid dripping.
It's not tightly closed, and you have to, the microwave is not totally
there's some flavor mixing within this microwave, and that cilia ends up underneath that cover because it's not totally closed, what's preventing it from dripping back into your food?
So you have to, in order, where's the tray from the microwave? The tray is in, let's say, in the ceiling.
It could be anywhere. It could be on the glass tray.
Okay, so you're saying it's, rise up from underneath, get into my bag, and then drip down. Okay, I don't see such a strong concern. I can think about that. I don't see such a strong concern there. Okay.
There's going to be a couple more shots afterwards if possible. Okay.